We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast here on the We Made This podcast network. This is your first special after series two. And as always, I'm joined by Kurt North. Hello, Kurt.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad. You okay?
I'm not too bad. I'm going through some stuff at work. And if anything, what ideally I'd like to do is just to take some maternity leave, but that's not going to happen, unfortunately. But it's been a bit of a testing couple of weeks for me with work. There's a lot of things going on, but happy to be podcasting again and joining the boys from the Comatose and take it from there. Yeah, so looking good.
And we've also got one of our regular hosts with us as well. Hello, Colin.
Good evening. I say good evening. When people are listening, it might not be evening.
It could be 6 a.m.
It could be any time.
Might be like Merry Christmas or something if they're really late.
I don't think there's going to be anything merry about this Christmas, to be honest.
Oh, let's not. We're here to talk about Red Dwarf. We're not here to talk about crap things that are depressing.
I'm having pigs in blankets, and I don't care what, you know, it's all good. If I have pigs in blankets, it's good.
The next episode's the Christmas special.
I know, but now I'm thinking about pigs in blankets.
Yeah, well, let's all bring pigs and blankets to this special. That'd be a great one.
Not for me. I'm veggie.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I mean, there's bound to be some kind of Linda McCartney type sitch, isn't there?
Yeah. Linda McCartney in blankets.
That's also not helpful. I'm gay.
You'd have thought they'd have run out of her by now, anyway.
Moving on.
It's been a while, Mark, hasn't it?
It really has. For this special episode, we're talking about a bit of an obscurity. It's an episode that never got made, that was originally going to be the first episode of series three of Red Dwarf, and it's called Dad, and the only access we have to it was on a DVD special where they had an artist do some nice pictures of the boys from the dwarf, and they had Chris Barry narrate the script and do actions of all the other cast members, and it's a fascinating little 8 minutes. I had no idea this existed until we started doing this podcast. Had either of you seen it before?
I hadn't seen it before, but I knew of its existence.
Yeah, I was in the same boat.
But I have now.
Well, not that we recommend watching these things illegally. They are from a out-of-print DVD, and they are, let's be blunt, they're on YouTube.
They are.
And it's quite easy to find as well. Just type in, surprise, surprise, Red Dwarf Dad.
Yeah. Yeah. How does YouTube, like, work? There's so much hooky stuff on there.
Every now and again, stuff will get taken down, but other people will upload it.
Yeah, and yeah. I think it depends on the studio as well and how bothered they are about it. You mentioned it's out of print, so I don't think they're that bothered.
I think it might be on the Blu-ray extras, actually.
Mm.
But I haven't got the Blu-ray, so I don't know. But yeah, I think they put that and the Body Snatcher, where they did the same thing for the Lost series one episode, that they've done the full episode of that. It's like 35 minutes long, so it's longer than a normal episode.
Yeah, we're going to look at that at some point, but
yeah,
we probably should have done it after series one if we'd have like planned properly.
We'll have to get time slides so we can go back and do it then.
Yeah, it's amazing what we can do when we plan, Mark, but unfortunately we don't tend to plan.
No, we don't. And then we did six specials between series one and two. There was only supposed to be two, but then that documentary happened and I got impatient and wanted to talk to my mates about RPGs.
Yeah, I did think, like, when you did that, I was like, that could have waited till next season. I mean, you're like, oh, well, are you gonna put it on? Are you gonna put your show on a week earlier? Well, no, I'm not ready yet. All right, I'm gonna do the RPG.
That is exactly what happened. I got overexcited because I'd read a book,
and it was a very good. It was a very good episode too, I might say.
It was. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. I had no idea whether anyone would like it at all, because it's two almost completely different cultures being smacked together in one book, and I'm glad it worked.
It's two different types of nerds, so there's definitely some crossover.
Yeah, I will say I still don't know what the fuck you were talking about, but I enjoyed it anyway.
Right, good. Which one of you was it that messaged me with just the words arse magic?
I think that was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is a very sophisticated role-playing game that you were taking the piss out of, Colin. And no role-players have ever called it that before. Oh, wait. Every single role-player has called it that before.
It took me a while to get GM, and I'm going for Games Master.
Correct.
Yes. That took me about, what was it, an hour and a half, 2 hours long? It took me about an hour to work it out.
Tried really hard not to be gatekeepy as well.
It's quite difficult these days when you want to set up an RPG game, because Patrick Moore's dead. So getting him to turn up with his CGI face, it kind of limits what you can do.
Well, that's the only reason why I knew why it was called Games Master. That's how I linked it.
Oh, I loved Games Master. I miss Games Master. If only I had a podcast about children's telly. Oh, wait.
There is a really good Games Master podcast that I listen to called Under Consultation, but it's not on the We Made This Network, so can't talk much about it.
We can.
I think that's allowed. I think we're allowed to talk about other podcasts.
Good, because I do a lot.
Yeah. It is okay, right? Because I have, and I don't want the gaffer to like cancel me.
You'd soon know about it. It's fine.
Shall we talk about Dad?
Might as well.
Yep.
Now we're here.
So it opens up with a very interesting art style that kind of reminded me, it felt really British, like a maybe Beano or Dandy or Bust or something like that. And
hold on, I think the art is the actual original storyboards, I believe, or at least the same sort of style as they would have when they storyboard out the whole episode.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not new art. You don't think it's new art for these things?
I don't know for definite, but I know that they partially scripted and storyboarded some of the episodes, so I think they've probably used the storyboards for this, which explains, because they're quite quick. Some of the drawings look quite rushed. I mean, particularly Lister does not look particularly brilliant at all in any of the pictures, but it's just to show them what the scene's going to look like. It doesn't need to look exactly like Craig Charles.
He looks Lister enough that you can tell it's Lister.
He's got the hair.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but maybe I'd get it in my head because I've watched a lot of kind of reconstructed Doctor Who stuff where they've got the audio. And then they've done an animation for just the audio. And maybe I got it into my head that they'd come up with something new. But what you're saying makes complete sense.
Well, having said that, what you've said with, you know, it has that Beano and Dandy kind of style to it. If it was done around that time, you can imagine that that's kind of just the style that most people would go to in that era anyway.
Mm. I liked it anyway.
I was definitely reading the Beano every week at the time that this came out.
So it would have come out.
But I know I really liked the art style, but you didn't seem to like it very much, Colin.
It wasn't that I didn't like it. I think if they'd have wanted to represent the characters, they could have drawn better versions of them or got someone else to do them. But I don't think that was the original intended purpose. I think it was to storyboard it out so that they know what the scene's supposed to look like.
Hmm.
It doesn't have to be something that they spend hours and hours and hours drawing to get it right. Whereas if they were doing a full proper animation, you'd expect them to put a little bit more into it.
Yeah, and this wasn't animated.
I can tell you this, I couldn't draw that.
Neither could I. I'm shit at drawing.
Me too. I'm crap at drawing as well.
I'm just a critic.
Mine would be a stick man and then a circle around the belly. It would just be like a little circle, and I'd have to rub out the middle line.
What did you think of the art style, Kurt? Did you like it?
I didn't pay too much attention to it. But yeah, I do like it. I think it's nice. I do particularly like Crichton. I think Crichton's, Crichton's probably the best out of the lot of them.
He looked really cheerful.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Like an extra friendly Crichton.
Yeah.
But she was, Crichton's a pretty friendly dude anyway, you know?
He is. And Chris Parry's voice of him is spot on.
Yeah.
But it's Dave Lister. He's a bit ropey, but there's it's Crichton's absolutely perfect.
I just watched it not long before we started recording with my wife because I wanted to get her perspective on some of it. And she said he's not got enough energy in there for Lister. Lister would have got way angrier in some of the bits than how Chris gave his voice. Sort of, he was a bit more laid back than he would have been if he'd have actually had Craig Charles doing the part there.
I do feel that Chris Parry was the right choice, though. I think that of all of them, with his background as an impressionist and the fact that he clearly can do a very good Robert Llewellyn impression, and his Cat's impression was, I'm going to go with charming.
Okay.
I think out of all of the actors, he was the best to do this.
Definitely. I mean, if they'd have got Danny John-Jules to do it, he would have just danced and that wouldn't have come across well because you wouldn't have been able to see him.
I did have in my head, though, that Chris Parry doing... Have you ever seen Wolverine when Hugh Jackman does Wolverine on the screen? Yeah. He does some additional recording, ADR recording, and he's like running through the forest and he's doing all the scratching marks and stuff, where he's just completely like sort of in cast, in character, and he's like pretending, doing all the running and stuff like that. I can imagine Chris Parry doing that and then trying to do Dave Lister. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So... It opens up in the quarters and Rimmer's on the bed with a book about Biggles. A pregnant Lister arrives with a pizza.
Where did he get the pizza from?
I presume today's pizza is pizza a la creme? I don't know.
Raw liver and banana pizza is what the pizza was. Really reminded me of some of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pizza toppings, which I'd have been watching around about this sort of time. Because they had things like marshmallow and pepperoni, jelly bean and sausage, anchovies and bananas, so that's quite similar, and peanut butter and clams.
Peanut butter and clams?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't imagine banana on pizza either.
Well, some people put pineapple on and they're sick.
So you don't think people should put fruit on a pizza?
I don't think so.
What's a tomato?
I don't want tomatoes on my pizza apart from the tomato sauce type stuff.
Right, okay.
I don't want, like, raw tomatoes because they're just... I mean, they're not as bad as courgettes.
Having said that, though, I can imagine cooked banana, though. I could imagine cooked banana being quite nice.
Plantains. You can have plantain and jerk chicken pizza.
I mean, cravings are a thing, right? I remember when my sister-in-law was pregnant, she was never big into chocolate. But she just ate lots of chocolate. She didn't have, like, chocolate with gravy or anything like that. She just ate a lot of chocolate. So yeah. I think all this stuff about, like, you know, fish fingers and custard or whatever, does that actually happen?
That was Doctor Who.
It was Doctor Who, yeah, well spotted.
He wasn't pregnant.
That was Matt Smith. He was just reborn again, wasn't he? But he wasn't pregnant.
The point is still valid.
Perhaps it's subtext. Perhaps he was. But they just didn't tell us that bit.
What I'm saying is I've known pregnant women who've had a craving for, they just want chocolate or they desperately have to have a certain type of yogurt. But I've not seen, like I say, chocolate with gravy or whatever.
Yeah, like coal sandwiches and stuff like that.
Sponges and stuff, like proper sponge.
When my wife was pregnant, it was Pom Bears mainly. So
Pom Bears. Nothing wrong with Pom Bears. Nothing wrong with Pom Bears.
But it's a joke that's regularly used in comedy, isn't it? The weird cravings. Yeah. But I've never seen in real life any weird cravings.
Neither have I.
My mum went off apples when she was having me, just couldn't physically. She actually loved them and ever since has never been able to eat an apple.
You ruined apples for her.
Rude.
Amazing.
What can I do? What can you do, eh?
To be fair, it wasn't under your control anymore. It was hers.
I think it was. Malevolent Kurt.
Yeah.
Moving on. Lister gets his belly out and Rimmer complains. And Lister says that a lot of husbands get anxious, which annoys Rimmer. He vehemently denies that role and he explains that he is super butch, which I laughed at that.
Yeah.
I think I like the idea that Rimmer was brought on to Red Dwarf to essentially keep Lister sane, but when he had to step up, he didn't fucking do it.
No.
And they reused the wham bam thank you, Mr. line.
Yes, they did.
Yes, that's something I picked up on. Yeah, because it was something where I was, it jumped out at me, because later on they start using elements of the script which we see elsewhere, which you can understand. But the fact that they've gone back, it totally reeks of first draft. You know what I mean? It's like, obviously, they're obviously working on it, and they'll probably change that. But because you can imagine that getting to the story and then not going, well, we've used that, we probably shouldn't do that, let's go a different way. But it definitely feels first draft to me for that reason.
That's it. There's stuff that they then use later on from this, but
yeah,
you know, that had already gone out in the previous series. I mean, perhaps they were successfully hoping that people would have forgotten, because I'd forgotten it.
Oh, that's one of my favourite lines. It's quotable dwarf. Wham, bam, thank you, mister.
See, it's not for me, but it was the line that jumped out at me when I watched this. It was the one that was like, oh, wow, well, they've used that before.
But that line actually comes out when Lister basically recapped what happened in the last episode of Series 2. And again, this goes back to what I think is something that perhaps Telly did more during this time period, because you couldn't easily binge or rewatch stuff. And it was just remind you why the hell he's pregnant. Yeah. I don't think that would have been done in a modern series.
Well, these days it would have had a previously on Red Dwarf, but at the start, for about 5 minutes at the start, showing you clips from the previous one.
Yeah.
It would, if Red Dwarf USA had got past the starting blocks anyway.
No, let's not talk about that.
No.
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 I want to talk about your thing previously. Was the X-Men cartoon the first thing to do previously on? Because that's the first time I remember it as a kid.
It's the oldest one I know of it on, but there's probably lots of people that can let us know of others, so they should tweet us.
Yeah.
At Red Dwarf Pod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be polite, though. Don't be douchey. Well, the first time previously happened with me. Don't do that. Be kind. Hashtag be kind. Lister is obviously going to have a cesarean, but he is worried about stretch marks. And Rimmer points out that male baboons have given birth before, and that Crichton is getting quite good at practicing cesareans.
Yeah, so that sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole at that point.
Of course it did, because you're Colin.
Yeah. So you've seen the case studies. Male baboons have done it lots of times. And I was sitting there going, have they? So I looked it up, and there was a fertility clinician called Cecil Jacobson who claimed to have transplanted a fertilised egg from a female baboon into a male baboon's abdomen in the mid-60s, that it then carried the fetus for 4 months. But he'd never actually proved it, and he never published those claims in any proper scientific journals. And later on, he was convicted on several counts of fraud for ethical misconduct for other things not connected to that. But yeah, I don't think that baboons have. However, it's the 22nd century. Well, it's 6 million years after the 22nd century, but there's a good chance that, you know, they've had a bit more time to do it since then.
I wonder if that was the inspiration. I wonder if they'd read about this fella.
Definitely it will have been, but I don't think that they will have known at that point how discredited the guy was, because they didn't have Wikipedia.
No. And Wikipedia is the be-all and end-all of all knowledgeable information, isn't it, really? It's 100% correct at all times.
Absolutely.
Oh, don't. Lister opens up his pizza box, and as you said, it's liver and banana. And I think he's trying to be encouraging. Rimmer starts talking about, can you imagine if Arnold Schwarzenegger was pregnant, and trying to be reassuring. And it's just not.
No, and it predates Junior, where Arnold Schwarzenegger was pregnant by about 4 or 5 years, I think.
I went down a rabbit hole at that point, because I watched it on YouTube, as people have already said, and I'd seen someone put that, and I thought, right, I'm searching this right now. I'm gonna check that. But that is incredible. Are you people aware, just with like foretelling of stuff, are you aware of the Lone Gunman from the X-Files?
I've watched it once.
Yes.
Right, okay. So the Lone Gunman were three nerds that were the believers.
Frohickey,
yeah.
Can't remember the other two's names.
Langley.
That was it.
And?
Jeff.
Dave. Bob.
Oh, you're making me forget now, though. It's Frohickey, Langley, and...
is it Byers?
Byers, yeah.
Yeah.
So so Byers is like named, he was, his initials are like JFK. But so they had a spin-off TV show, right? And it was called The Lone Gunman. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
The very first episode aired, now this will give you an idea, aired in May 2001.
Yes.
Do you want to hazard a guess what was the story about that episode?
I know.
I think I know this too. Isn't it something about how they predicted the 9/11 thing?
They had a remote control 747 that was heading for the Twin Towers that was going to be flown into the Twin Towers.
Not been repeated much, that one.
No, it hasn't. So, yeah. So talk about foretelling the future. It's amazing when things like that happen. But that one, when you watch that one back, it's like... That is very, very close to the bone. It's obviously different. It's in dark, and it's not terrorists. Because they go and see like a conspiracy guy in the government, and he starts to say about all these things about terrorists being if they flew this into the building and things like that. But it's the it's actually remote control flown in rather than a takeover of the actual plane. But it was scary stuff. And it was, as I say, it was May 2001 that aired.
And clearly, Al-Qaeda didn't watch that.
No.
Because that would have been a better idea.
It would have been a better idea, yeah.
Wow, Colin. Just wait. I'm sorry. I'm moving on. The next scene is very, very brief. Crichton is pushing Lister on a hospital bed down Red Dwarf's corridors with Kat and Rimmer in tow. And the only thing I've got to say about this, like, 10-second thing is the art was great. I really liked it.
I did like the art in that bit. I've got to say, it was dynamic. And it was, Crichton's face is brilliant in it.
It is a nice face.
I like the juxtaposition of like the white and the black, because obviously he's all in black. So I do like that kind of the contrast in that.
So the next scene is Rimmer and Kat outside Medbay, and they want to know what's going on. And a happy Crichton comes out and tells them that Lister's alive. Oh, and he's got a baby as well.
Wonderful news, sir. Wonderful, wonderful news. I haven't killed him. Probably my favourite line in it. It's not my favourite bit, but it's my favourite line in the not episode.
Crichton can't work out the sex of the baby, and after a knob gag, we found out that it was a boy.
And the knob gag is my favourite bit in the episode, because they're asking because Crichton thinks that all humans look the same to him. He didn't know that there were more than one sex or gender. And so they ask him what's between its legs, and he says, air.
Space.
He says, higher up. And then I think it's Rimmer puts his index finger out, and Crichton goes, no, and puts his little finger out.
So the knob gag was funny. And the you all look the same to me gag is something that, I'll be honest here, I have used this in the past, mocking racism and talking about women, when people have said you find this woman attractive, in the past I have responded, they all look the same to me. I'm not quite that crude or insensitive anymore. And I think this is a joke that aged for me about 10 years ago. And this is also clearly perhaps a gag that they wouldn't use in a modern world. Do you think I'm being oversensitive, or do you think that's probably fair?
No, I think at the time they said that they thought that this episode, when reviewing it, it was maybe coming across as a bit sexist. I mean, we didn't really touch upon it in the earlier part when they were talking about the husband bit, but there was elements in that way. It feels a bit like, well, okay, they're maybe pushing this a bit too much.
Yeah.
So I think that they did have that. I mean, you used, what were the terms in the RPG one you used last time?
Sensitivity readers is what Martin was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they'd realised themselves, and this is probably a part of it where they've gone, it's probably not, thinking back, it's probably not the right thing to do, so let's not do it.
Yeah, so it's, But what they'd actually said was, it was the episode was dropped because it could have been deemed homophobic and misogynistic, and that jokes about pregnant women could be in poor taste. Basically, Rob Grant, who wasn't a dad, thought all the pregnancy stuff was funny. Doug Naylor had just recently become a dad, so he was against all that side of things. So I made sure before we started recording, because I was conscious of the fact that we are three men discussing it.
Yeah.
Mm.
I got Helen, my wife, to watch it with me, and she said, no, it's fine, basically. I know it's not much of a sample size because it's just one person, but she has been a pregnant woman at some point, and she didn't see any way that would be seen as offensive, because it's all stuff that's been done in other things. You know, she's conscious that she can't really talk for everyone because some people would be offended by it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you should say that. I mean, this is totally different to what we're talking about, but my other half, she's been watching... In some ways, I got dragged into it, and sometimes I was like, "I'm quite enjoying this," but let's not answer that. But the Australian, like, sort of Married at First Sight thing, and I'm like,
"Is your podcast on that starting soon, Kurt?"
Yeah, it's starting very soon on that, and even to the point where I started to understand the people's names. I was like, "Oh, what am I doing?" Anyway, but there was a particular one where the boys had a boys' night, and they start talking about wife swapping and things, and. There's a particular like story where one guy had actually gone and looked into whether or not this other girl liked him, and it blew up the show and stuff like that. It became very dramatic, whatever. But this boys' night, he was one of the ones talking, and they were saying about wife swapping and all that. And he basically said, "Well, what about my Tracy? You know, she's good looking." And when they actually re-showed that, there was an interesting. Like reaction from my other half, because she was like, I don't see a problem with them saying that, because basically he was saying, well, hang on a second, no, my girlfriend's quite hot and quite good looking, you know what I mean? But everyone else on the show were like, that is outrageous, it's blah blah blah, it's blah blah blah, and it's like, well, it is a boys' night, but at the same time, I can totally see why people were offended, but not everyone's going to be offended by that. Some people might find it perfectly acceptable because you expect that boys are going to do that. So it's just interesting that from that point of view that you've got, you know, as you say, that the fact that both of them, one without and one with, had a difference of opinion, and you know, it wouldn't necessarily land in all corners, and that's always going to be the case, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very fond of the term 80s ick, as we know, and maybe I'm not coming at it from an educated point of view, because, you know, not only am I a man, I'm gay. You know, I don't deal with pregnancy.
Are you?
And
I have you ever told us that before?
Sod off. I was trying to make a serious point.
Hey, we love you, you know that.
Yeah. But yeah, you have got a good point, Colin. This is a bit of a sausage fest episode. Maybe we should have got a lady involved. But I just didn't feel like, of all the jokes that made me think, it was the "oil look the same to me" joke, which, you know, it was meant to mock racism, but it feels outdated now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That is definitely a point of contention, because that in itself has connotations, doesn't it? Rather than, like, say, an opinion on something. It wouldn't land at all. Probably didn't land then even.
It didn't land when I used to crack it. It used to get a really weird look from most women. That's why I stopped doing it.
How long did it take you?
I was a new gay. It was all funny to me.
Ah, okay.
Anyway, back to the quarters. Baby is asleep and Rimmer's looking at him.
And there's only one.
What?
Yeah.
There's only one baby.
There should be two.
Oh, shit. There is only one baby.
Yes. They'd already established previously, an entire series and a half ago, that there would be two babies.
Jim and Bexley?
Yeah, how are we going to end up with two babies on board?
And not only that, they referenced it in the previous episode, when it says, well, it's going to be fun finding out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you're right. This is clearly a first draft, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they needed it to be Jim and Bexley after Jim Bexley Speed.
Yep.
Huh.
But then the whole next conversation is them talking about, you know, what they're going to call the baby.
which kind of makes sense because the joke is around Rimmer wanting the baby to be called Arnold and saying, yeah. Oh, it's not because my name's Arnold.
Yeah.
that I have more thing with, because you could call it baby brain. You could call it the fact that you're not really thinking about Jim and Bexley at that moment.
Yeah.
I know he's said it on many occasions. That's what you'd always call it. So you'd think that if you're always going to call your sons that, that's the first thing you would say.
Yeah.
It depends on, so there is a bit of leeway with that, but the fact there's not a second baby, that's the big thing for me.
Yeah.
Although we have said before that Red Dwarf is inconsistent and we don't care. So
true. So, true.
You know, they've got the wrong name of the pub in a minute as well.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, Lister poo-poos the idea of Arnold and suggests Barry.
I love this line.
Which Rimmer points out would mean that the kid's name was Blister, which that's probably why they only had one baby to make that gag. But even for a Red Dwarf, the complete lack of consistency means just lose that gag.
Yeah. In fact, they just lost the episode.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, think of it more of a macro. Yeah, they didn't actually air this. This was never supposed to see the light of day, was it? But never mind.
So Rimmer suggests that maybe he use his dad's name, but Lister doesn't know his dad's name because he was left in a pub, in a box, under the pool table. And that's correct, isn't it?
It is. It's the Flag and Lettuce is what they call it in this, but it was the Aigbeth Arms is what it's called in all other versions, which the Aigbeth Arms is a real pub. I think it's changed its name. Not to the Flag and Lettuce.
I was going to say, is it going to the Flag and Lettuce? But...
No.
Is it in Liverpool?
It is. It's the pub where Grant and Naylor used to go and drink. And it's where they sketched up the ideas for, I think it's where they came up with the ideas for Dave Holland's Space Cadet, which eventually evolved into Red Dwarf.
That's a cool kind of Easter eggy type reference, isn't it?
Is it still there?
I believe so.
Okay, I might have to next time I'm in the pool, I might have to nip in. I have to nip in.
A pilgrimage.
A pilgrimage, yeah, absolutely.
See if there's a box under the table with our Rob or Ross written on it.
Yeah, well here's the thing. I don't know if you know, but I'm on other podcasts.
Are you?
Yeah, there's a podcast called Millennium. Do you know what their symbol is?
Ah, yes.
It's an Ouroboros.
It's all linked.
This came out in 1997, and Millennium started in 1996, so not this dad episode, the actual when they started to mention it in season 7, and I kind of fanboyed a little bit when I noticed it. I was like, oh, they've got the Millennium symbol on here, and it was like, and so the our Rob or Ross actual joke hit harder for me because it was like, that's brilliant. I love that play, especially the fact that it was the main symbol for Millennium, which is great.
I'm fairly certain it existed a while before Chris Carter invented Millennium.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying, but it's just what I particularly like as a 17, 18-year-old lad was that I watched two of my favourite TV shows was had, for some reason, decided to use the Ouroboros.
As it originated in ancient Egyptian iconography, I've just looked it up. But yeah, no, I can dig that you'd be like, oh, that's familiar. Mm. Cool.
So Lister tries to defend his parents who abandoned him, and he points out that they must have had their reasons, and they did leave him with a warm blanket and a fiver. The fiver really made me feel like this was dated.
Did it?
Because a fiver wouldn't get you a pint now in that pub.
Up here it would. I can get a pint for a fiver.
Well, yes, but... I'm slightly exaggerating, but it wouldn't get you two drinks.
I only drink water, so I have no idea how much a pint costs.
About a fiver.
Yeah, fair enough. But depending on where you go, but anything between, unless you go into an establishment which is a hot topic, which we won't talk about, but you're talking £4.60 upwards.
Right. So it wouldn't get him a round in unless he was just...
No.
I mean, even Mike Maloko, sometimes you can get it for like £3.80 or something like that. You're not going to get two.
Yeah, fair enough. I remember pound a pint nights being a thing when I first started going out to pubs.
And they always used to be Monday, Tuesdays, because it used to be the end of the barrels.
But that was 1997, Colin. It's been a long time since then.
Yeah.
I used to, because we used to, being in a band, I used to obviously gig over the weekend and then go out midweek. So Monday, Tuesdays was always like all the bar staff used to be out, you know, all of the musicians used to be out, and it was a good time.
Who was serving everyone?
It was the unlucky sods who had to work on a rotational basis. Because I used to go out with one of the barmaids, so it was fun. But yeah, Pound of Pint nights were fantastic.
I remember them fondly too. Well, no, I don't remember them. That's the fucking problem.
Yeah, we used to be able to get whiskies for like 75 pence and vodkas and all kinds.
Rimmer suggests that Lister's parents were brother and sister and asks him how many toes he had. Lister's like, no, I've got no one on our toes.
Which was... they later used again in The Last Day, later on in season 3.
I thought I recognised it.
Yeah. There's a few bits.
Yeah, this back end, there's quite a bit of it, isn't there?
Yeah. Mm. There's the Samaritans bit, which is... it's a brilliant joke. Rimmer talking about where he worked for the Samaritans, and there were 7 suicides, and one of those was a wrong number because he only phoned up to get the cricket scores. And then that's so good they use it later. You've got to use that one again.
Yeah, and that's the way they actually ended this. It was only 9 minutes, this kind of little half episode, really, and where Rimmer kind of starts taking the piss and Lister suggests that he should be on the Samaritans. Yeah. And then they crack that gag and then it kind of fades away. So it seems to me like this was so early in its kind of writing process and abandoned pretty quickly by the looks of it.
Yeah. Well, there were another couple of scenes that were storyboarded out in the same way. Because there was a bit where the Infinity Patrol turn up.
Yeah. So what is that about then? Because I only became aware of this just as I was arriving home this afternoon when you mentioned them. So I very quickly looked at it and they kept going on about Bill. But I haven't looked into any more detail about what it was about. Do you know what it was about?
The Infinity Patrol, I don't know if it's explained in later episodes that I've not seen yet in any of the Dave ones or anything like that. But Ace Rimmer and his sort of dimension jump type thingy, that's the Infinity Patrol.
Oh, right, okay.
His workmates, basically. The outline of the script explains that the Infinity Patrol turn up and help them. So the baby grows up to be an 18-year-old in about 3 days. So the Infinity Patrol turn up to take him back to his own dimension. So that's how they get rid of the baby, so that they don't have to bother with that for the rest of the series. Then Lister, because it's all brought it to his memory again, decides that he wants to go and confront his dad. So he finds a photo of the Flag and Lettuce that's got somebody that looks quite a lot like him in the photo, and uses the Time Slides mutated developing fluid, wasn't it, in Time Slides? He uses that so he can step into the photo and goes and talks to his dad.
Whose name is Barry?
Yes.
Which was kind of makes the earlier thing a little bit weird, because Lister suggested Barry as a name, and then immediately Rimmer says, why don't you name it after your dad? But I guess he didn't know his dad's name.
Well, because it's all written out later on anyway, because Lister's dad's name is Dave Lister.
Yes. True.
But we won't get to that for quite a few series yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, he basically goes to speak to his dad and he just has a little conversation with him where he says couldn't afford to do the right thing, which was get an abortion, and it just ends like that, which is a bit dark.
I didn't like that. I didn't like
that. I literally just wrote holy shit in my notes for that.
Yeah.
You can see now, perhaps if you hadn't watched these, the Infinity Patrol, Lister's dad and Rimmer's dummy, these little, even like, I think they're like a minute and a half max each, and that was grim. I thought, shit, a brick. That wasn't the tone of Red Dwarf, I didn't feel. Yeah. I felt like they got that wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, there's always a danger of, like, putting Scousers on, you know, as the thieving lot and whatever. But they've always played with it as a playful thing with Liv Lister. And doing that way was a bit like, No, I don't like that at all.
It was an unpleasant stereotype.
Yeah, and it was, just the, as you say, it's not Red Dwarf style. You know what I mean? They would play around with that idea and some of the stereotypical things of Dave Lister, but for me, that's just not right, really.
It felt to me like it was almost a demonization of the working class, and there's gentle mockery like they do throughout the series of Liverpool and Dave being a bit common, but this was streets different, and I really didn't like it. I couldn't believe it the first time I saw it.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, if I'm being honest with myself, there's a lot that takes me to react to stuff. Sometimes I'll think about, but what I mean, and I mean this in a serious point of view, actually, that sometimes I'll watch something and I'll, in my head, know it's wrong, but I don't tend to have a visceral reaction. It's like, well, that should be doing that. But this one made me go, oh, no, no, don't, you know what I mean? It was a proper, like, full-on reaction, and I don't generally do that with most things that I watch. So it was bad in my eyes.
Yeah.
And the final one was called Rimmer's Dummy, which was one gag about Rimmer teaching himself how to unclasp bras on a dummy that had got three pairs of tits.
Yeah, and it just wasn't very good.
No.
Yeah, I mean, all three of those are available on YouTube as well. Again, you just have to search for the name. I found one YouTube user that had Dad and Infinity Patrol, Lister's Dad, and Rimmer's Dummy in one place.
Yeah.
I do feel like I'm glad that this wasn't the direction they took Red Dwarf. Would you say that you would feel the same?
Yeah.
Yeah. I quite like the fact that they'd set up this cliffhanger and then at the start of the next series completely threw it away with a Star Wars crawl that was too fast to read. There's certain things that they set up in that they'd outlined in the script that they didn't get to do, but it tells you in that bit, such as why Crichton reappeared, because he'd crashed his space bike. And then Lister picked up the distress call, went and rescued him and rebuilt him. And it implied that the reason that his face has changed, because obviously it's a different actor, because it was David Ross previously and now it's Robert Llewellyn, is that he rebuilt him using one of his spare heads, which is why he's got a different face.
Interesting.
But no, you know, they got rid of that bit, and then the actual episode of, you know, episode one of season three, it's definitely a better opener than this would have been.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a clear difference between series one and two and then three onwards. And this would have continued the same kind of level of vibe of series one and two.
Yeah.
I think with hindsight would have probably been a mistake, because it was really from series three onwards that Red Dwarf kind of hit its stride in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that we're doing a bit of a disservice, because we are basing all this on really early sketches, and we don't know how much the episodes that we did get to see were refined and redrafted. You know, the brilliant episodes that we love may have started off like this. I mean, probably not quite as bad as this one, because they completed them and finished it off rather than scrapping it at the first hurdle like they've done with this one.
I think the difference with this compared to potentially most of, apart from later in the BBC run, is that this felt like it was trying to continue a story where we've talked about the first couple of seasons of, yes, generally the story kind of continues on. It's very episodic, like you would get in these normal TV shows. But then we found the layers beneath that where you feel that the characters are getting like closer together and forming more of a friendship, but it's not overtly that happened last week, this happened next week, and this feels like this happened next week. Where what happens in the beginning of season three is you get the crawl and it almost reverts back to, right, we're on the episodic viewpoint, and you know, that's like, this is a story you could have seen, but actually this is what you're watching. And I've always liked that, because before I knew Dad existed, was I like the fact there's a whole new story in the background that's happened somewhere, and you're going back to basics and back to where you were.
I think concept, the pregnant man was better on
the idea stage, and when they got there, they'd written themselves into a, oh, it's not so funny now.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen Junior? Because I don't expect that to be a very good film.
I haven't, actually.
I have seen it, but a long, long time ago. Because it had Junior and you had twins.
It's not going to be as good as Predator, is it? But then, to be fair, most things aren't as good as Predator.
I mean, yes, but that's...
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to go down that route of, you know, the one of the ultimate trilogies of all time in Junior, Twins and Kindergarten Cop, I mean, how can you beat that as a trilogy?
I only remember that bit where he sits on the piano in Kindergarten Cop, and that's the only bit that I remember.
Classic.
So anything else that we haven't touched on with regards to this? I love that this exists. I love that we've got to see a kind of behind the scenes thing. But I'm also glad it didn't happen in the end.
Yeah.
So I'm really pleased that we got to see this. I'm really pleased that we got to look at it. But is there anything else that you spotted that you would want to discuss about, Dad?
The only thing I would say in general is, like, yes, I agree with you, Mark, that it's good that we've got it. It's good to have a look at it. I don't think I would have paid that much attention to it had we not had to do a podcast on it. Because even to the point of, like, 16 minutes before we were due to do this, I hadn't properly seen that 8-minute sketch. So I really struggled to, like, to physically watch it. Now, this is not something that I've watched things like The Animatrix and, you know, various different things around, but I struggle with non-canonical things of, like, being able to watch or see it if it's not in canon. If it's in canon, I can kind of watch it or read it or thing, but because it isn't and it has a different story, I'd have gone, oh, it looks all right. It's interesting they did it, but I might watch it the once and forget about it. Mm. And I probably have watched it the once and forgotten about it. So I struggled to watch this. But yeah, I think it's nice to exist. It's good that it exists, and it's nice to talk about it just to see, just to get an idea of what was in their mindset at the time.
I did find literally just about 10 minutes before we started recording, there is a version on YouTube with Rob Grant and Doug Naylor doing a commentary to it. It's not massively insightful. Basically, at the start of it, that they've clearly not seen it, and since it came out, because they're saying to each other, "I don't think we ever got as far as writing anything where the baby appeared." And then the second half of it is obviously the baby's there. And they're like, oh, here we did,
right?
But what I did think was quite nice is I think this was relatively recently. I think this was probably within the last 10 or 15 years that they've got together and recorded this. And I didn't think that they got on well enough to do that, because since the two of them split up working together after season 6, they've not done anything, as far as I'm aware, since then together. And all the YouTube commentaries, it's Rob Grant, Ed By,
yeah.
But yeah, Doug Naylor isn't involved in anything like that and hasn't tended to be. Basically, when he quit, he said he wanted to be known for other things as well as just Red Dwarf. He didn't want Red Dwarf just to be the thing on his tombstone, basically, is what he said. Which, in some ways, I can see where he's coming from, but I don't think he's done anything as much that people would associate him with since then. Because Red Dwarf is so good.
Yeah.
It's going to be something that towers over everything. But, I don't think I've seen anything or heard anything, because obviously you don't see them on this, but I've not known of the two of them working together other than that bit. So it was quite a nice surprise to have them talking to each other quite amicably, because I always thought it was a bit of a nasty split that they had, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Obviously, I haven't seen that, so that's still good news.
Yeah.
I like that. Good. The only thing I wanted to add is that I really feel that Chris Barry is made for audio. He shone in this.
Don't you like his face?
Well, I do like his face, but I think he was a very distinctive narrator, and I liked the character voices. He even kind of, the slight intonation in changing his own character from the way he spoke as a narrator. Yeah. And I think that the impressions were subtle, but pretty cool. And yeah. I haven't listened to the audiobooks, but I think Chris Barry reads them, so I'm quite looking forward to that now.
He does. I used to have them on cassette, which is how long ago it was.
Nice.
If only you could put them on 10p3.
Oh, I can now. Excellent. Oh, I haven't still got the cassettes, though.
Can you, Colin? I haven't seen that. You haven't put that on Twitter recently.
I'm quite excited about that. Yeah, for through this month's issue, we now can do tapes.
Mm. Game changer. So that's about it. Shall we... Well, we've heard about free with this month's issue. Colin, where can people find you on the internet?
So, yeah, I do two other podcasts, Free With This Month's Issue and Weedig Music. You can find us on weedigpodcast.com, where all of our episodes are collected together. We're both on the We Made This Network, obviously. And you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, that kind of thing. Just do searches. You can find them.
Lovely. Kurt, where can people find you?
Twitter, and Twitter. R Muldrake, R-M-U-L-D-R-A-K-E for my personal Twitter. I haven't been on there much. I've had quite a lot going on outside of the realm of the social webs. But but on with regards to podcasts, you can find me on The Time Is Now, which is the Millennium podcast, which features an Ouroboros, just in case anyone doesn't know. that is The Time Is Now, so you can find that at The Time Is Now pod. The X-Cast will be coming back very shortly, if not when this airs, and that's covering season 6 of The X-Files, and that's the X_cast. And then later on in the year, we've just finished doing the podcast for Make It So, which is a Star Trek Picard podcast usually, but we have been covering season 1 of Discovery until season 3 came out. So when season 3 came out, we're on a bit of a break now until the new year, where we're going to do some new specials, similar to what this is. We're doing a couple of specials on Star Trek Picard. So that's what we'll be doing. And you can find that at Jean-Luc Poddard. So that's the best place to find me.
If you're looking for me, it's at Mark Adams HC on Twitter. And I also am a bit of a podcast whore like you two. I've got 3. I do Right in the Childhood, which is a monthly kind of nostalgia telly thing where me and my mate are both opposite ends of the millennial age, and we take it in turns to look at each other's favorite telly programs. I also do a weekly B-movie podcast that's at Tat Club, and that is, yeah, that's, I swear a lot on that. I get drunk sometimes too. That one definitely comes with an 18 rating. And I'm also a humanist celebrant, and I have a podcast based on my job where I talk to people about their experiences with birth, relationships and death, and obviously naming ceremonies, weddings and funerals. And that's called Life's Milestones, at Life's Milestones on Twitter. So thank you very much for joining us for this special episode of Shipwrecked and Comatosed. So until next time.
Jim and Bexley. Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
How do I actually stop the computer screen from switching off after 15 minutes?
Are you on Windows?
Windows, the one with the squares. You know how they changed it?
Keep that in.
With loads of squares.
That's got to stay in the episode.
No, it hasn't.
Or at least just stick it on the end. Right, you need to...
That's going
to
be a smeg up that. I love that.
Yeah. Right, you need to click on the Windows bit in the bottom corner,
right? Yeah,
to bring up your thingy. So you've got your settings just above that.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm doing it myself now, so because I don't actually know
settings.
Yeah, and it will be. Oh, bollocks! Hold on.
I can't see the bollocks tab.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Observing the Pattern, a Fringe podcast.
You know, you'd have a doctor say, oh, well, it's because, you know, if someone's come back from dead, it's because they were frozen and their body temperature warmed up, or, you know, oh, they ingested this poison that, you know, made it look like death or whatever it was, rather than it being a miracle that's seen as the more outlandish thing. So it's quite interesting seeing the roles reversed here.
Because
I know something's lied with Walter, but then equally, I felt kind of sorry for the priest who's just like, right, you realise this is mad, right?
Yeah.
There's no part of this that is safe.
Life's milestones.
Sleepwalkers. Took him to see that.
That Stephen King thing with the evil cat people.
About the incestuous cat people, yeah.
Goodness sake.
And also Natural Born Killers. There's another one I went to see with my dad.
How old were you?
Well, I was. He used to sneak me in. I was about 14. Yeah, so he'd go and buy the tickets, and I'd go and get the popcorn, and he'd be like, all right, let's go. Bearing in mind, my dad at the time was the detective sergeant of the West Midlands Drug Squad.
The time is now. A Millennium Pop.
Yeah, I think when we get to Skull and Bones, the final scene in that one where he gives his reasons to Emma, I think that has been criticised quite much. But then, obviously, we'll look at Peter Watts over the course of the season.
Oh, but that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how many times, you know, that's what people in his position say.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you hate me and you think I'm doing bad, but, you know, when the food runs out, you know, who are you going to blame? That goes back to 3 days of the Condor, right?
Yeah.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.